from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today, I get to chat with legendary author Dan Wakefield, who has recently moved back home to Indianapolis.
I'll get a preview of this year's Indie Jazz Fest.
And then I get a peek at the Picassos on exhibit at the Conrad Hotel. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Author Dan Wakefield is probably best known for his best-selling novels Going All the Way and Starting Over, which were both made into feature films. He's also been a journalist and a screenwriter himself. Recently, he did something he never thought he would do, move back home to Indianapolis. Travis DiNicola sat down with Dan to talk about his work.
Dan, welcome to Art of the Matter. It's a real pleasure to have you in our studio today.
Very nice to be here.
Thank you. So, I am looking forward, of course, to hosting you at Indie Reads Books coming up on Thursday the 6th. And that night we're going to spend a lot of time. I know you're going to be talking about Going All the Way and both the book and the movie. And I know that was a really, it sounds like a really positive experience for you. It kind of reconnected you to Indianapolis in some ways.
Yeah, it really did. And it was a great experience. It was the opposite of my other novel and to movie experience, which was Starting Over.
Mm-hmm.
And that was more like the common author experience where the author is immediately shut out and nobody will talk to you after the papers are signed.
Yeah, they didn't even return your phone calls during Starting Over,
no.
Right?
No, and, you know, the same thing happened to Updike with, I was here on a panel with him at the Spirit and Place, one of those conferences.
Sure.
And he had that experience with The Witches of Eastwick. And as he said, they filmed the thing in a town 20 miles where he lived, and they never never invited him to the set.
Wow.
He said, "I would have liked to meet Cher."
but with Going All the Way, you were actually quite a part. I mean, you were on set pretty much every day that they were shooting.
Yeah.
You were a big part of that that summer that they were shooting.
Oh,
that
yeah,
here in Indy.
That was great. And, you know, the two young guys who did it, Tom Gorey and the director, Mark Pellington, they had just turned 30. They had done commercials and won a MTV award, but this was their first feature. And they wanted me to write the script, wanted to film it in Indianapolis, and kept me involved the whole time. So it was really great.
That's really good.
The opposite of the other experience with Starting Over.
And in many ways, that was kind of the, from what I understand, the beginning of you also spending more time here in Indianapolis. And now you
actually, it came before that. It was really the Central Library back in '87. The Ophelia Roop, who was one of the people there, invited me out of the blue. And I hadn't been back publicly since Going All the Way came out. And I said, is it safe now? She said, oh, yeah, we use your book in book clubs now and everything's fine. And Kathy Gibson also was part of that. And they brought me back for many events. And I started coming back really then every other year or so.
And you say, is it safe? Because, in fact, when Going All the Way came out, you were a little bit not exactly as welcome in Indianapolis for a while.
No, a lot of people thought it was, you know, I was satirizing the city. And I always said, you know, I could have just as well said it in Cleveland, but I don't know anything about Cleveland. So it was really about the mores of 1954, especially in the Midwest. I wasn't trying to single out Indianapolis as a place of sin or backwardness or something.
And now, now you've moved back to Indy. In fact, you just moved back to downtown Indianapolis about 6 months ago. Yeah. Dan, what prompted you to want to move back home here?
Well, a lot of things came together. I think it really began with my being asked to edit and write an introduction to a book of the letters of Kurt Vonnegut, which is coming out in late October. And I had been invited by the Vonnegut Library to come and be on a panel about Kurt's work. And Kathy Gibson had a great dinner party for me. And then my dear friend Jane Roulon, who I'm sad to say died last week, the next morning took me to look at apartments. And it was just like on a whim. I said, let's look for places downtown, because I'd given up driving. And if you don't drive, it's really hard to live in Miami. And we found a building that I liked, and the office wasn't open. So I asked her to go in Monday morning and see an apartment. And she called me up and said, yeah, I think you'd like this. And I said, well, sign me up.
Because you had been living in Miami before, and of course, Boston and other places as well.
Well, I lived in Miami for 17 years teaching at Florida International University, where I was writer in residence. And that was a great experience. And I tell you, I went there in 94. Those were the good old days in Miami Beach, in which South Beach, south of Fifth Street, where I lived, was really like a community, a little neighborhood. The tallest building was 8 stories tall. Now you can't even see that building.
Yeah.
So that was a great time.
You know, what I want to ask you about, I want to take this opportunity, is of course, I mean, you're very well known for your novels, Starting Over, Going All the Way, and also some work that you've done in TV. But you've also done a lot of, I mean, you really started out as a journalist writing for The Nation, and even more recently doing a lot of memoir work.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about when you got started as a writer, the type of work you were doing back at that point.
Well, I have to tell you, I really got started on the Shortridge Daily Echo.
Yeah, at Shortridge High School. Yeah.
And in fact, somebody recently sent me an email saying that she had remembered something I wrote for the Rippler, which was the paper of school number 80, which I'm sad to say is now a condominium. But anyway, and through Shortridge and the Echo, I got to be the school sports correspondent for the Star, and had a summer job on the Star sports desk after my junior year in college. And there I got my first byline, which Bob Collins gave me. And that was a great experience. And I went to Columbia and had some great professors. And through really a lot of luck, I got to write for The Nation. The first thing I ever wrote was covering the Emmett Till murder trial, which was the first big story after the school segregation case. And it really turned out to be a landmark case and sort of the beginning of the civil rights era.
I was reading that one of your writing professors at Columbia was Mark Van Doren.
Yes,
Very well-known writer and teacher of English.
Yeah, and in fact, he was really the reason I went there. I had read an essay of his called Education by Books, and it was so great. And it just told how you could really get the best education in the world just by reading the great books of the world. And it was wonderful. When I went there, I got to take one of his classes right away. And, of course, most of my classmates were guys from New York, and I was like, you know, really an oddball from Indiana, and they made fun of my accent. And I remember going to Van Doren's class and afterwards saying to two of my New York classmates, hey, Van Doren's great, isn't he? And one of them said, he's too Midwestern. I said, yeah, that's it. That's it. That's what I meant. But he was very welcoming. And, you know, you could walk into his office. He graded his own papers. I so admired those guys. And I later had a year-long fellowship at Harvard called a Nieman Fellowship. And And I was, at the end of that year, I donated to the Columbia Alumni Fund. I was so happy I'd gone to Columbia because at Harvard, the professors were sort of like movie stars. They didn't, you know, grade their own papers. They had section people, mm-hmm. grad students who taught, did the real teaching, and they would just come in and give a lecture and disappear off the stage in a cloud of dust. So anyway, but no, but Columbia,
your appreciation of Columbia grew. That's fantastic.
And I also had a great professor, C. Wright Mills, the great sociologist. And in fact, I worked for him as a research assistant right after I got out of Columbia, mm-hmm. and edited a book of his letters, which University of California Press published. That was a great experience too.
I want to jump ahead a little bit in your career to a book that you wrote, I believe, in the 80s that's titled New York in the 50s.
I wrote that. That came out in 92.
Oh, 92. Okay.
Yeah. The first memoir was called Returning, A Spiritual Journey, and it had been based on a piece I wrote in the New York Times Magazine called Returning to Church. Mm-hmm. And when the piece came out, I got a lot of mail and several offers from publishers to do it as a book. And that was the first memoir. And that sort of set me on the course of memoir writing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, New York in the 50s was a great experience. And also then somebody from Indianapolis, Betsy Blankenbaker, came to me and said, well, she'd always wanted to produce a movie of Going All the Way, but now that had been done, how about a documentary of New York in the 50s? And she really did that. We did it, and interviewed a lot of the people of that era.
And you were really focused on a lot of the writers and artists,
right?
Greenwich Village and of that time period and,
and
the Beats.
I lived in the Village from when I got out of Columbia in 55 till 1963 when I went up to the Harvard thing.
So Kerouac, Jane, and Burroughs?
Well, Kerouac was never a buddy at all. In fact, I wrote a piece about him, which he didn't like, and which I didn't blame him for not liking. And I met him once at Allen Ginsberg's house, and that was a historic event because there was Ginsberg said, well, there's this great psychologist down from Harvard, Dr. Timothy Leary. And he at that time was a crew cut guy with real Ivy League clothes, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. But he was passing out psilocybin, like a manufactured LSD thing.
Uh-huh.
And he asked me if I wanted to participate. I said, no, I'll just be the journalistic observer, the objective reporter. And so anyway, Leary is telling me how great this drug is. And he says, it's very creative, makes people creative, and also makes them very mellow. Take Kerouac, for instance. Sometimes he's very angry. I said, yeah, I know. And he said, well, go over and talk to him now. You'll see how mellow he is. So I went over. I said, hi, Jack. I'm Dan Wakefield. He said, oh, yeah, you wrote that big, bad piece about me in Commentary. And I said, no, it was in The Nation. He said, yeah, I'd like to throw you out that window. So I went back to Leary. I said, I don't think the drug has taken effect.
Wow. That just must have been such an incredible time. I mean, so, I mean, were you aware at that time of anything as far as how special that time was with just the amount of creativity and the writers and the artists?
Yeah, I think so. It was very special. And the great thing was the older writers were so generous to the younger writers. And, I met James Baldwin at the White Horse Tavern where all the writers assembled. And I had just read his book, Notes of a Native Son, and it had a photograph of his face on the cover. So I recognized him. I went over and said, I just read your book, and I loved it. And he said, well, sit down and have a beer. And he wrote a blurb for my own first book, which was a journalistic book about Spanish Harlem called Island in the City. And he was a great person, and, you know, we luckily have a wonderful clip of him on the New York and the 50s documentaries. He was mm-hmm. one of the great speakers I've ever heard in my life. But he was generous. William Styron, who was a great yeah. hero, who I met at some party, and I had just written a piece in Esquire, and he had been also writing things for Esquire, and somebody came over to meet Styron, and he introduced me, and he said, "Well, this is Dan Wakefield. We're colleagues at Esquire." I thought, "Wow, well, that's
cool.
The nicest thing anybody could say." So, yeah, but the people were tremendously generous,
wow.
and it was a great feeling and atmosphere at that time.
I bet that's just so exciting. It's terrific that you were able then to also go back and through your memoirs write about it, and mm-hmm. of course the documentary. I want to ask you before we wrap this up, Dan. Yeah. So now here you are back in Indianapolis. Recently, you just had a piece actually that was published in the Indianapolis Star about sort of memories of Indianapolis. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, you know, it's funny. They asked me to write a piece about some, you know, memories of growing up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I didn't know what I was going to write. And I said, well, have anybody else written one of these? And they sent one, a marvelous one, Jim Tom had written, that really was intimidating. You know, it was very profound. I thought, my God, I can't do anything like that. But I sat down at the typewriter. In fact, that afternoon that I later saw you, and I had a memory of a girl in our class at school 80 singing a solo to the song Hiawatha, which we mm-hmm. sang in class, and it just set off this chain of memories of school 80, which I loved, and writing it, I wrote it in about 2 or 3 hours. It was like being in a trance, and it was just a great experience.
Well, I remember we got together a little bit after
yeah.
that afternoon after you just finished writing. You were still kind of a little bit in a trance.
Yeah, I felt like my God, I don't know how to talk to somebody because I was just coming out of that. And it you know, it's I have to tell you, it's rare that happens where the writing mm-hmm. just flows, and that was one of those. And just remembering that, and I remember every teacher I had at school, lady. And classmates, and it was great to just thinking of those afternoons with the windows open and singing from the mm-hmm. Golden Book of Song, and that whole aura, that whole atmosphere was beautiful.
Dan, I want to ask you one last thing before I let you go here, and that is, first let me start by congratulating you for being the Lifetime Achievement Award winner this year for the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award, and that award ceremony is coming up later this fall, and it's quite an honor. Have you given much thought yet as far as what you might be saying that night?
Well, I have a few things to say, indeed, and mm-hmm. As you may know, it's an honor, but the prize is $2,500, but I have to give back the prize to a library of my
right.
choice.
Uh-huh.
So at any rate, I'm happy for the honor. And really, since I've been back, I've received a lot of wonderful prizes and friendship and opportunities. So it's okay.
Okay. Well, that'll be a fun night to celebrate. I'm looking forward to that as well. Dan, it's a real pleasure having you here on Art of the Matter, and also just having you back in Indianapolis. And I look forward to chatting more with you again soon.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Travis DiNicola with author Dan Wakefield. Dan's website is danwakefield.com. You can hear him read and sign copies of his books at Indie Reads Books at 7 p.m. on Thursday, September 6th. More information is available at indiereadsbooks.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Indie Jazz Fest guys want you to think they're smooth operators. Well, of course they are. And Sharon Gamble invited Al Hall of Owl Studios and Dave Ali of the Jazz Kitchen in to find out more about this year's festival and how you can get your fill of smooth. smooth jazz, that is.
Changes, always changes to Indie Jazz Fest. It's become part of your brand. What's the biggest change this year, Al?
We're extending it to Sunday, so it will be 2 days in OptiPark, Saturday and Sunday, which is in Broad Ripple. Last couple of years, we've just had it on Saturday, in addition to the week before.
Mm-hmm. And why did you go to that? What made you think that that was something worth exploring?
Well, we had such a great crowd last year that we thought we would stack it up and shorten up the day, so, 'cause last year it was all day and then all night, and the crowds just weren't coming in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 12 o'clock in the afternoon. So we decided on Saturday to start it at what hour? 6 o'clock on Saturday?
Yeah, so it's five, I think 5 on Saturday and then 3:30 on Sunday.
So mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Especially since, you know, with as hot of a year as we've had, even in mid-September, it's still going to be kind of warm. So.
Yep.
But it's always cool at the
72, 75, I think, is what the forecast is calling.
I like your really long range forecast. Yes, but dry. Oh, yes, there are stories there. We won't go there because we're not going to tempt the weather gods.
That's right.
And artists for that, let's go back to the beginning of the Jazz Fest. And that's kind of a false thing to say because the Jazz Fest is a year-round brand.
Correct.
Yeah, most certainly. You know, throughout the year, we're putting on concerts. We're also dealing a lot with our education part. It's a facet of what we do that's maybe not touted as much. We're working on getting the word out a little bit more that we are a year-round organization that puts on these clinics, master classes. We have that, like he was mentioning earlier before we went on air, that Indie Jazz Fest band. It's a 9-piece band that goes around to schools. There's a narrator. It's flanked by video screens. Rob Dixon heads that up. And it really hits them over the head. I mean, it's a great way to introduce, a young student to what jazz is about. And we have crafted the show so that, there's some familiar items in there, but at the same time, we're introducing them to Louis Armstrong and kind of moving from Louis on up. Certainly in an hour, you can't touch upon the whole scope of it. But I think it does a great job of introducing them to the art form. And then a lot of times what will happen is Rob will go back into the schools and do something maybe more intensive, focusing on one area, be it improvisation or big band playing or a certain segment of time. So it's been working really, really well. So.
This is a little bit of an unfair question because we don't have Rob here to directly address it, but you guys work as a team on all of your outreach and education. Big picture question, do you feel like enough kids are discovering jazz? Do they know what it is when you go out into the community?
That's a good question, and it probably expands from kids to young adults. I mean, we're always trying to sell the art form, and it's our view that the earlier you start, the more successful we'll be. Whether that will actually pan out, given our competition with other genres, who knows? It'll play itself out to see who enrolls at IU Jacobs School of Music, I suppose.
Yep. Direct connection there.
Well, we've always thought that jazz, just like any other side of the, be it rock or, rock or any other art form or music art form, we just want jazz to be part of that puzzle. It's like we don't expect people to migrate and not be a classical fan or anything like that. We just want them to appreciate all of it. So,
Sure. So how do you, jazz is such a broad umbrella, it's a big tent, to use the political terminology. How do you decide, if I came into the Jazz Fest office, if I came into Owl Studios office or the back office at Jazz Kitchen, would I see a We're Taking Over the Universe master plan of next year we're going to emphasize this kind of jazz, or is it more of a just trying to have a little something for every jazz taste in each Jazz Fest festival year?
I think we're learning by experience. We first started out being purist in the first year we did this 4 years ago. And instead of having R&B or having other forms of music, we just went to straight ahead jazz. And we learned from that the crowds really wanted something else. So the next year we tried a little cool jazz, and that brought a lot of people in. So we're trying to balance it out to be all things to all people. Obviously, as you said, if you have 10 fingers on your hands, there's 10 forms of jazz, and you're going to have to try to please 10 people. Well, you're not going to do that, but we're trying to diversify and get as many people in as we can.
Yeah.
I think one thing that we also tried to look at is, and we saw this over the last couple of years, is there are certain jazz forms that carry better in certain venues. In other words, if it's a sultry jazz vocalist, the main stage outside where people are eating popcorn and isn't necessarily the most flattering venue for that style of it. So, you know, instead of that, it's at the cabaret at the Columbia Club, or if it's a big band or something like that, it could carry outside. But I think given people's taste, it maybe carries better at University of Indianapolis in the Crystal Lujan Fine Arts Center. So that's one thing that we've also tried to do, and that's why we emphasize that it's a week-long festival and not just the 2 days outdoors. You know, we'll be the first to tell you, we're going to try to bang you over the head when you come out there on Saturday and Sunday. You know, we've done the Saturday as almost incorporated some jam band. We really felt like we needed to get some of the younger audience engaged. Robert Glasper, Carl Denson are two artists that are really popular in the younger population, and so we're hoping that they'll pull in the crowd. But then we also balance that out by having a Stanley Clark George Duke, which is, you know, a perennial favorites across the board, and the younger generation has a great appreciation for what they do, so they stick around and they enjoy that. But also it draws a little bit of the older generation to then be introduced to what some of the younger bands are doing. So, you know, it's all about that balance. We feel like that is part of our job with Indie Jazz Fest, is to introduce a few new artists every year, or at least a few new artists who are
new to us,
new to us and new to what we consider kind of our core crowd. And then as we were going to Sunday, as he mentioned, we had a great success with the Saturday being so full. We were like, let's break this into 2 days. And part of the reasoning behind that, too, was because we're actually making Sunday a smooth jazz show. Now, I don't want everybody to think, we have gone smooth, and you know, we have no problem with smooth. But we want to make sure everybody knows we also have a Slide Hampton tribute. We also have cabaret singers. We also have some Latin jazz in the week as well, solo jazz piano. So, you know, it's just choosing the venue that fits your personal taste maybe the best. Also, a special mention, too, the Sunday is going to be a tribute to Chuck Workman, which we lost this last year. And
huge hole in the community.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So we're anxious to do that. And he was a huge smooth jazz fan with all his TPI days and even going over to ICR. So,
hey, trust me, they're in three dimensions here in the radio studio. They still have the rough edges. They're not going all smooth.
There'll be some dirt.
Actually, for somebody who's not familiar, we may have some more traditional jazz fans. What is smooth jazz? How would you characterize it?
I'll let you take that.
I think it's, you know, the way I try to look at it is, you know, sandy beaches and nice bottle of wine and a picnic basket. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think that what we tried to do is we tried to choose smooth jazz gets a bad rap for one. I mean, it sometimes has been categorized as kind of elevator music or
something
like that.
Because it's so accessible.
So it is so accessible. And a lot of times they're doing instrumental remakes of, you know, popular, you know, Marvin Gaye tune or something like that. So it gets kind of a bad rap. But what we've tried to do is, I mean, for instance, Brian Culbertson, he has a number one smooth jazz song on Billboard right now. So, you know, I mean, these are guys that are at the height of that genre. So they play. I mean, they come out, they bang you over the head. They're going to put on a great show, but they're also going to be, you know, pretty accessible. So Gerald Albright, one of my favorites from way back, you know, I mean, he's, you know, he played with Cannonball Adderley. He played with Frank Zappa. I mean, these aren't guys that are just, you know,
great street cred there.
Yeah,
wow.
I mean, they're the real deal. So, you know.
But it's also a great match to Sunday, which tends to be a more laid back kind of day in a lot of people's lives. So,
Definitely.
Question for each of you: your favorite event in the days leading up to that big 2 day finale that you think might get short shrift, that people might not know they should attend, that is going to be really hot? What's your favorite kind of, don't overlook this concert, don't overlook this event?
I think they all kind of get in that category a little bit, but I would say, you know, two that I want to, well, one that I specifically want to make sure that's mentioned, you know, Indy Jazz Fest also strives to pay a great tribute to the jazz legacy of Indianapolis, and we're doing that through a Slide Hampton tribute this year. So there's 2 days, one being at University of Indianapolis, WICR is helping put on a show that's the Indy Jazz Fest band, and basically it's kind of a This Is Your Life type program where we're going to go through the years and have custom arrangements of Slide Hampton's tunes or things that he was influenced by. I mean, he played on Maynard Ferguson's band for a long time, you know, maybe interjecting some of that music in there.
And remind us where and how he got his start?
Well, he's from here, and he was part of a family of about 9 guys, and, you know, they were all just, you know, very musically inclined. I mean, people have obviously heard of the Hampton Sisters. They you know, passed away a couple of years ago, but, you know, they were also part of his family. They were his older sisters. Mm-hmm. But it's, I think it's important that we pay tribute, and that'll be on the Thursday. So that'll be, at, like I said, out of U of I. And then Friday we're going to kind of join forces with Steve Ali at the Jazz Kitchen, and then that'll be the one Slide plays on. So one will be more of a tribute, you know, with the Indy Jazz Fest band doing the heavy lifting playing-wise, and then moving on to him belting it out on the Friday night. So that would be my biggest
concern. And that's a tribute to a great. And one of the things that you shouldn't overlook is on Monday at the Jazz Kitchen, we have always paid tribute to the American Pianist Association Cole Porter Fellow. And this year it is Aaron Deal and the Aaron Deal Quartet. So that's the up-and-coming people coming in. So we're a little bit of a mix and match between appreciating the old and appreciating the young.
Sharon Gamble with Indy Jazz Fest organizers Al Hall of Owl Studios and Dave Ali of the Jazz Kitchen. The Indy Jazz Fest is September 10th through the 16th at venues all around the city. You can find out more at indyjazzfest.org. While you listen to Derek Gardner and the Jazz Prophets from the Indy Jazz Fest Grillin' and Groovin' CD.
Travis?
Yes, Sharon?
I have some fresh blueberries and some fresh strawberries, and I think you have a nice cooler of some libation ready.
I do, yes. What do you want to do with this?
Well,
and a few peaches, too,
I think you're going to fire up that new grill,
uh-huh.
And we're going to have a fabulous Labor Day cookout to celebrate the... It's not the official end of
it
summer.
It is, but you know, it kind of...
It kind of feels like it, yeah.
But I think that sounds like a great idea. Last big blowout, grill-out cookout for Labor Day, and maybe a few arts things to do that we'll talk about on that calendar we call.
What'll we do?
Yeah. I'm thinking about next weekend already, of course.
Penrod.
I can't wait. We're going to be live out there with Matt Sosi and the Blue Stage, and we'll be doing interviews and chatting with all different people from different arts organizations out of Penrod. That will be a lot of fun. Also, thinking about next weekend, too, is the Indianapolis City Ballet Evening with the Stars.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be at 8 p.m. on Saturday the 8th, so right after Penrod. Of course, at the Penrod Theater at the Old National Center. Tickets are still available, and you will get to see some of the absolute best of the best ballet dancers from all over the world, including the American Ballet Theater and the New York City Ballet. It's the event of the year. I can't wait.
Woohoo! If you can't find something to do next weekend, you just are not paying attention.
So true.
Because there is so much going on, including all the fabulous First Friday celebrations. I want to call one to your attention. Make sure you put it on your path for Friday night the 7th. This one is We Are City. We Are City is an ongoing program series highlighting ideas for making cities better places to live. It has a whole bunch of collaborators. And in the City Gallery, Wishard Eskenazi Health will be presenting the public art selections for the new Eskenazi Hospital. City Gallery, remember, is at the
Harrison Center.
Harrison Center.
There you go.
I was trying to think of the exact room that it's called, but it's been labeled City Gallery. So just go in and say, where's the City Gallery? And you'll find it. So that's coming up, as well as, of course, every other kind of art walk you can think of coming up next Friday night, September 7th.
Yeah, that exhibit sounds really cool, the We Are City. And also, of course, then there is at the Harrison Center, there are other gallery stuff going on that night as well. There's always a ton of stuff going on at the Harrison Center worth checking out. Also, something going on. I want to add one more thing, because Jonathan McPhee has new work as well at the Harrison Center that's opening on that night, September 7th. And the show is called The Tide Crashes, and it's new paintings and drawing from Jonathan McPhee.
So the Tide Crashes. That's
a great
intriguing.
Title, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that should be pretty cool too. So that's all going on as well.
A lot of fun. Staying on the visual arts theme, I'm going to call this to your attention one more time because it closes this weekend. It's Snapshot Painters and Photography, Bonnard to Vuillard. It's only the third and, in fact, the final stop for this exhibition of snapshots, and they truly are snapshots. Most of them are not formal poses, formal studies, but they're snapshots taken by painters, both French and Belgian painters, who got their hands on one of those newly portable cameras created by George Eastman. Thank you very much for the Kodak camera there. And were just fascinated by this new technology, not unlike people who get their first smartphone, start taking all kinds of experimental photos with their smartphones. So that is on view, I don't think I actually said this, at the Indianapolis Museum of Art just through this weekend, so go soon.
Hey, something else going on next Saturday is the Art versus Art Paint Day.
Wait, you can't say it that way.
Art versus art!
Thank you.
So it's not actually the competition day, it's the paint day. And there's actually still time. You can register if you're an artist, if you go to Primary Colors, get all the information about how to participate in Art versus Art. And the paint day takes place where, at the City Market and between 10 and 4 p.m., 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. And during that time, all the artists will get their canvas and their paints, and they can go paint whatever they want that will then compete in the Art versus Art competition.
I dare you to think it without that funny voice.
I can't do it.
Well, you know, the theater season, you know, the dust has just settled. The theaters are repainting their walls and cleaning their carpets after the dust has settled on the Fringe Festival, which I'm awaiting Pauline Moffat's numbers, but it sure looked successful. It looked like it might have been record attendance.
Congratulations on a great
Fringe. Absolutely. So the theaters are getting all gussied up to host their own productions. And I want to call to your attention, if you've never seen A Chorus Line, wow, you are missing something. It was a 9-time Tony Award-winning Broadway favorite, and it's going to be on stage at Booth Tarkington Civic Theater. It's going to open on Friday, September 7th, run through September 22nd at the Tarkington at the Center for the Performing Arts. If you're any kind of a performer, not just an actor slash dancer slash singer, you will appreciate this kind of behind-the-scenes look at all the anguish that goes into putting your art out into the public.
Very cool. Hey, last thing, real quick, and that is that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde opens up next weekend at the IRT, kicking off their fall season.
Shouldn't you do that in two different voices?
Yeah, I'll work on that one for next weekend. Sharon, we will be out at Penrod, of course, next Saturday, and looking forward to that, but right now we've got to go.
All right.
Okay.
We'll see you then.
We'll be back, though, next week with that calendar we call.
What'll we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Conrad Hotel in downtown Indianapolis is developing quite a reputation for their art exhibits. The next one staying at the hotel will be a collection of etchings, prints, lithographs, and a drawing of Picasso. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Conrad's general manager, Greg Tinsley, about the show.
Greg, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you again.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me back, Travis.
Yeah, well, this has been a really cool project that the Conrad here in Indianapolis has been doing, really for the past year or so in terms of bringing artwork into the Conrad.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, we've been doing it at this scale for about 12 months.
Okay.
So you're right, going on a year, and just looking forward to continuing that, really getting some national and regional recognition for it now, and we're having a good time doing it. So
well, that's a very cool thing. And, when you were on before, we talked about how, a lot of your staff, those who are interested are trained to be able to give tours, and, certainly it's a great benefit for the guests, but it's even cooler that, anyone can really, come in and walk around the lobby and check out the artwork at the Conrad. But you are raising some eyebrows right now by having Picasso in town.
Absolutely.
This is a big deal.
Yeah, well, you bet it is. It's certainly getting a lot of media coverage, and rightfully so. As your listeners will know, Picasso is one of the most influential artists of the 20th century, and we're just excited. We're thrilled, as a matter of fact, to in our next rotation, actually starting September 4th, we'll kick it off September 7th with First Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
To bring an exhibit of that level into the hotel, we're actually going to hang on to it for 6 weeks.
Good.
And make sure that everyone in the city gets an opportunity to come by and take a look at it with at their own pace, or make an arrangement to get an art ambassador to take you on a tour, mm-hmm. or maybe make a private event around it. We're thrilled to have it, and we can't wait to share it.
It's very exciting. And to be clear, what we're talking about are our works on paper, primarily prints. I believe I'm really spending most of his career from 1905 to 1968. The prints represent, and there's also an original drawing that's included.
Correct.
And a series of posters that came out of the Museum of Modern Art exhibit. So we're not talking any paintings. At least your insurance guy can take a breath here, but still, nonetheless, these are rare pieces, original prints and original drawing, certainly very valuable, and just a terrific opportunity here in Indianapolis to see some Picasso. We, the IMA has a couple pieces, but not an extensive collection. So this is, for many people, who aren't able to get to other museums, this is going to be kind of a once-in-a-lifetime event.
Absolutely. And honestly, Travis, that's been kind of our intent, is maybe for the folks that don't have that opportunity, to be this close to it, mm-hmm. to walk around, to feel it, to understand it. We've actually got a very notable expert of Picasso prints that we're bringing in from New York also. So there'll be some opportunities the day that he's with us. We've got several events planned around that, a few more details to work out on that. But again, we'll take our art ambassadors through some very significant training on the pieces that we'll have. And you're absolutely right. We've got 25 prints that'll be on display for us or with us. And then the alcove, which is where we have the Before They Were Famous exhibit now,
mm-hmm.
that'll rotate out on the 4th as well.
That's sort of the space off of Illinois Street.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Right there on Illinois and Washington, right next to Tastings.
Mm-hmm.
And that space will feature these 25, or excuse me, the posters that will come in that, again, have not, many people have just not had the opportunity to see. And a lot of these will go back to private collections, things like that. Many of the pieces in the main lobby of the hotel, the more, these really notable ones, were featured in a book that was done specifically for MoMA when they actually did a Picasso exhibit there. So you are seeing pieces that are absolutely of museum quality. And that have, quite a history behind them. So, again, very excited to bring it to the city.
Now, Greg, I know that you have many skills and talents, and you have learned a lot about art, but you are not the curator of this. And I do want to mention Rhonda Long Sharp.
Absolutely.
Is the person who actually has curated this for you and has been very involved with the other art exhibits.
Oh, absolutely. She is the guiding force behind this for us. She and I just have a wonderful partnership, and she has the knowledge and skill set behind this. She's a big part of how we train our art ambassadors. We're up to about 25 now on staff that have been trained with Rhonda I'm proud to be one of those individuals.
Very cool.
And she is. You know, we've got some things in the works now, Rhonda and I, that beyond the next rotation, which I'll mention to you before we close, but we've got some things coming towards the end of the year and into next year that the community, I think, is just going to be thrilled with. So we've got a few other tricks up our sleeve here yet to go, but Rhonda is truly the brains and the beauty behind the whole outfit. We're pleased to share our walls with her and share our hospitality. So,
you know, I got to ask you, because this is a bit unusual for a hotel to be taking on an exhibit like this. We were joking before you went on air that some of your colleagues at perhaps some of the other hotels are like calling you up going, how'd this work out, and what sort of insurance? And I mean, this is kind of an unusual thing, right? I mean, you're certainly gaining some attention within the world of Conrad, I would say. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
And outside of that as well.
Absolutely. And, having a great art experience within a world-class hotel like the Conrad is not, unusual, I guess. It's certainly not typical, but it's been done.
Mm-hmm.
To have one that's sustainable, though, and to have it where that it is not something that's provided to just only a few people or on such an exclusive basis or for short periods of time. I mean, this is something where we're rotating this world-class art in and out of the hotel 2 and 3 times a year. And then we're also featuring in our public space and also in our gallery suite, which I'd love to tell you a little bit more about if we have time, four regional masters that still have, I talked about this last time.
Sure.
Had the pleasure of being on your show. These four artists still have either a tie to Indianapolis. Actually, all four of them went to the Heron Day School, and many of them still have either a studio here in town. Two of them actually still reside here in Indiana. So that works on display throughout all of our public space. Basically for anyone to see and to
Lois
walk
Main
and
Templeton
exhibit.
Is one of those artists.
Lois
right?
Main Templeton. Constance Edward Scopolitis,
sure.
Walter Kanabe, and then Rhonda was wise enough to bring in a sculptor, a gentleman named Dell Enox, out of Bloomington, and he works in only Indiana limestone. We've got three pieces of his on display throughout the hotel, and then one very special piece up in our gallery suite. So those are more of our kind of our permanent fixtures, and those are our friends. You know, we've done many events around those individuals when they're in town to support their causes or have it be a part of the First Friday rotation.
Sure.
Constance, we just featured Constance on August 1st Friday. Huge turnout. I mean, Indiana, that your audience adores these four people.
Absolutely.
And it just is so much fun to have them come in, and it really validates what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So very long answer to your question, but there are other places and other hotels that do it. And we can't find anyone that's using the model that we're using. And I say that a little bit bragging. I also say it because a couple of things that you've already mentioned, I tried to reach out to some folks that had done it before, and they said, what are you talking about? We've never tried that before.
Yeah.
So, we're blazing that as well, which is a lot of fun.
Well, congratulations on that. Now, I do want to be really clear about, if someone's listening right now, they live here in Indianapolis, and they're thinking, how do I, come see some of this work? Do I have to have a room at the Conrad? There is work that the public can see, right?
Absolutely.
And how does this work? I mean,
on September 4th, the current exhibit that is up, which is the William John Kennedy, so come before September 4th if you haven't had a chance to see that. And that's really celebrating pop art with Robert Indiana, Andy Warhol, and this gentleman, William John Kennedy, captured all of this stuff before they became
great
famous.
Great photographs.
Right now in our lobby, we're featuring Warhol Flowers, the series. And we've got sunflowers everywhere and these incredible prints all over the place that we'd love to have you come and see. On September 4th, we'll remove those items out of the lobby. That's where that main rotation will take place. We'll install the 25 prints into the public space that we talked about that really spans that,
And so 1905. That'll be in the lobby, and so people
can walk in the front door, you walk in, take a look at it, enjoy it, walk around, get close to it. Have an art ambassador take you on a tour and learn more about it if you'd like. And then hopefully we take you through the rest of the public space where those regional masters are as well. At the same time, we will have the alcove will feature that poster's portion that we spoke of.
Right.
That'll install the same day, and all of these items will be up. This is a relatively short run for us. Typically, we do...
It's about 6 weeks or so for this one.
Right. This one, mid-October, will come down, and then we've already got the next one planned. It's a wonderful artist named Russell Young.
Okay.
We featured a lot of his pieces in the hotel over the last year and a half or so, and he's just an incredible guy out of the UK. So, yes, absolutely, you don't have to stay with us. We'd love to have you be a guest.
Sure.
You know, we really hope that people will come in and take advantage and enjoy it. And then for many of your listeners, it may be a great opportunity to do a special event there and be among this art. I mean, obviously, that is our point. I mean, it's to help show nationally and regionally that Indianapolis really is serious about art and culture. That's where we're getting all the praise. We all benefit from that. Locally, take advantage of that. You know, come in and visit and see it.
First Friday on the 7th, Friday
September,
night.
September 7th will be pretty much the kickoff with the Picasso, just falling in line with the next rotation of First Fridays. We're proud to be, on that tour, and it's so much fun because the people we've met, it really is a unique group of folks, and we usually have 100, 120 people make their way through the hotel on that First Friday's event. And I would invite you and your listeners to always make us a stop on that First Friday. If you're not on the First Friday's tour, from what I've seen from going to some of the other locations, you're really missing something.
Oh, it's always a ton of fun. It's a great idea. You know, swing by the Conrad and
absolutely.
Grab a drink.
Champagne's always flowing on a First Friday.
Good to know. Greg, real pleasure having you in here on Art of the Matter again. And thank you very much, and congratulations on bringing Picasso to Indianapolis.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Travis DiNicola with the Conrad Hotel's general manager, Greg Tinsley. The Picasso exhibit opens with a public reception at the Downtown Hotel on Friday, September 7th, from 6 to 9. You can also get more information by visiting modernmastersfab.com. That's modernmastersfab.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 when I get a preview of the upcoming Indianapolis' Sister Cities Festival.
I'll get to chat with conductor Richard Alden Clark. He's also a composer and he has two new CDs.
And I'll find out about the new Lawrence Arts Center. Plus, we'll have that calendar of events we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.